Right.
Hey, welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here. Now on Steel Waves Radio, we are syndicated on Steel Waves Radio and Renegade Radio. So you can check us out there or Deezer, Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, any podcast outlet, YouTube. This is going to be on YouTube. So this is probably going to be your first YouTube video in a long time, Steve.
Oh, YouTube. Hey, I'm on Kenner Gibbers Show. That's how old I am. So
anyway, I am Dark Mark, the Goth Comedian, and joining us here virtually, because we have to social distance ourselves, is Hannah Bach.
Hi.
And everybody's favorite vegan heavy metal DJ.
Hello, hello.
How's your week been, Hannah?
I don't know. It's like my days are just melting into each other. So I didn't even know it was Wednesday when I woke up. I didn't know what day it was.
Okay. Yeah, did you get rid of that neck tattoo, or what happened there?
Yeah, you know, I'm not going to get it. I woke up the next day with no makeup on, and I looked like a drug addict, but not the fun kind, with that neck tattoo. So I was like, you know what, I'm just going to keep my sleeve.
Right. And you're looking at the two of us now. People are going to be watching this broadcast, and it's going to be switching between the three of us. And people are going to be watching this on YouTube, like, please, Hannah, talk so we can see you again. Please.
No! But, I look gross.
But we've got...
I'd rather know you need it than either of us, that's for sure.
I know you need a laugh, Hannah. I know you want to laugh. And I've got a guy here, one of my favorite comics of all time, one of the best comics of all time. Do you prefer Steven or Steve?
I like Steven. It's an extra letter. So
that's a Steven Pearl. One of the best comics of all time.
Yes, man. A1, man. Like prime cuts. I mean that.
You know what I hate, Steven, is when they do the 100 best comics of all time, like those online lists.
Uh-huh.
I look at those lists, I'm like, at least 40% of these comics could not follow Steve Pearl.
Oh, God. Oh, who puts these lists together? Who believes in lists? Lists and awards and all that crap is just crappy. You know, it just makes no sense. I look at Rolling Stone's 100 greatest guitarists of all time, Johnny Winter, 89. Fuck you. You know. You know, come on.
So you're the Johnny Winter comedy, basically.
It's the best is who you think is the best. You know, that's all. So whatever.
But trust me, Hannah, you're gonna be laughing a lot because this is he's been around. I always say when I introduce Stephen Pearl, I say Robin Williams stole his jokes.
Uh-huh. I didn't
really talk about that. Maybe three of them. He stole three of them.
He never stole any of my jokes.
Well, I'm lucky when he stole because he paid and my rent was due. So I did okay those months. So,
right. So, and we're going to talk about that.
Robin Williams was brilliant without me. He was famous when I met him. So,
of course.
Know, I've been hit a few times. A lot of guys have been hit a few times. But, you know, he didn't need to do that. He was brilliant without that stuff. So, you know, and some of these guys, well, Robin was just stealing you. Most of the people who say that are like glorified middle acts who will never get near that that level. So, you know. There you go. So just
what I'm saying is that your jokes are so brilliant that he could put them in his set and not miss a beat.
Well, the thing I didn't like about it when he stole from me is that he would like change two words of the joke and make it better. Go, that's the way I should have done it. You know, you that's the way it should have been. So, you know, so from now on, when I take it back along with the check, that's the way I'm doing it. So,
yeah. IMDb describes you as a typhoon on steroids.
Something like that. I think it was a tornado.
Oh, no, it's a typhoon on amphetamine.
Something like that, yeah. So,
which I agree with.
I guess so, yeah, on stage anyway. You know, oh boy, man, it's just, I'm just crazy up there, Daddy.
Well, before we get to the storm and a basic history of comedy through your eyes, a few sponsors real quick. Audible, if you go to audible.com/DMS, and trust me, I need the money.
Okay.
It's getting tough out there.
Never fuck with the sponsors.
No. But the thing is, this is a way to support me, support the show, and it doesn't cost you anything. Just go to audibletrial.com/DMS. You get a free book, and you got nothing but time on your hands. Listen to a book. You get a free 30-day trial. You can cancel the next day, but I bet you don't because you get big discounts. And two Audible originals, such as Alien 3. William Gibson wrote a different script. They acted that out. Kate McKinnon's got a play on, got a fairy tale on there. Paul Rudd's got a new thing on there. They got all sorts of great stuff, Audible originals. go to audibletrial.com/DMS. I know, I'm pretty sure you're not vegan, Stephen.
I eat what I want, you know, I try not to eat too much junk, but well, until this whole virus thing's happened, we have a 24-hour gym here in Vegas near me, and I was there every night, like 2, 3 in the morning, which I really enjoy doing, you know, smoke a bowl and go work out, so that was my
Just breath. Make sure you wipe down the equipment.
What?
Make sure you wipe down the equipment.
Back then, we didn't have to. We'd spit on it. We'd roll around in it like He-Man, and we'd eat the gym. We'd drink from the Hudson River. We were afraid of nothing. But, oh, yeah, so, well, now the gym's closed. I ain't doing nothing, so... But I don't know if I'm in shape or not, but I'm 64, and I think I've looked pretty good, and I feel good too.
No, so, I would not. I would.
When I want to get that. Oh, go ahead.
Although I know you and I know how old you are, if I just met you, I would never have thought that you look great. Hannah, agreed. Does he look 64? You don't look 64.
Not at all.
I want a passport. When I want to
get. He's like 46.
Yeah, okay. 46? I was hoping 19, but I guess that's not gonna happen.
I'm hoping.
I've had a hard life. I grew up on a train gang. But when I want the senior discount on the bus, I got to, like, draw 8 spots on my hand and say things like, "Bye, Cracky, when I was a boy," and then, "Well, you are old," and they let me on and paid the nickel. And I go, "Everything was a nickel when I, you could fill up a swimming pool with cocaine for a nickel when I was a boy and buy a house for another nickel." And they believe me. Okay, you can ride the bus, old man.
Well, that's the funniest thing is I was looking at YouTube clips of you over the years.
Uh-huh.
Where you did the whole grandfather bit.
You get fatter.
To where you're like, "Oh, now I'm the grandfather," and...
Oh, it's weird. Yeah, I guess, God, I go, well, I say in one clip, I'm 31 now, and I go, oh, that's a long time. Oh, old time.
But if you're ever in L.A. again, we're going to take you to Doomy's Home Cooking. It's a vegan place right by the M-Bar. You remember the M-Bar?
Sure, I remember the M-Bar.
1253 Vine Street, right in the corner of Fountain and Vine. They're right. Doing takeouts. It's the best vegan food you ever had.
I'll eat
pork sandwiches.
Sure.
Chicken parmesan, burritos.
I'm
telling you. If I put some Doomies in front of you, you would never know it was vegan. Shrimp po' boys, it's unbelievable. This guy's a genius.
Yeah,
wipe your mouth. Doomies Home Cooking, 1253 Vine Street. There's also one in Toronto, Canada. You'll probably get to Toronto before you get back to L.A.
So. Probably, yeah, probably.
And they are in Grubhub right now, so that's cool. So go ahead and order that. And support them because they're a local restaurant that needs your help right now.
Sounds yummy to me. Open one in Vegas. I'll be there every day.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. And if there's anybody doing worse than comics, it's people restaurant owners. So try to support.
Yeah.
And also, we're sponsored by Hustler Hollywood. There'll be a link in this show for 20% off anything at Hustler Hollywood.
Oh my!
And also Spy Associates. Now's the time to spy on somebody. They got GPS tracking, bug detectors, all sorts of crazy spy equipment. It's like James Bond stuff. You'll love it. Another link in here, 20% off any order over $249. Also, now we have merchandise with our new logo on it. We got hats. We got phone cases. We got coffee mugs. We got everything. You go to T Public, put in the Dark Mark Show, and there'll be a link on this website. Please support us. Get some Dark Mark Show merchandise. We will have Hannah merchandise soon, but I'm waiting until I get a few more sales because I know you're going to outsell me 10-1, and I promise to give you all the money minus my nominal fee. So,
hey, speaking of Hustler, Larry Flint walks into a bar. This is an old joke. All right, let's move on.
I went for the punchline.
That was it. Never mind.
Let me get some more caffeine.
There.
Hold on.
Of course, in Boston, we call you Doc Mock there. You're a little slow there on the draw there.
That must happen to you a lot where you're just so fast and these jokes are just coming so quick.
Boom, 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 I tell you. Just one after another.
When you see an audience, do you sense that they're laughing at 3 jokes behind
I sense they're waiting for the guy who comes on after me and in a hurry. So, yeah, get it over with, kid. No, I don't know why. I get up there. I get in a different zone. I don't know what it is. It just works most of the time, so I just get in there. I got to be quick. I like to come out of the gate just biting and kicking and scratching and screaming. So, you know.
Yeah, but have you ever been, like, on the show and, like, there's a big laugh and you're like, oh, that was, like, 4 jokes back?
Oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
And that's when I'm slowing down. So, you know. In South Carolina, it's 37 jokes back. So,
yes.
If I get the laugh.
Usually, yes.
You don't hear
heckling. You seem to have a bad time in the South.
Well, no, usually in the South, I've done what? In South Carolina, it was like, you didn't hear heckling, you heard tsh-tsh. So, you know, half blue boy dance.
So, Hannah, I will tell you that when I first moved to L.A., I moved in with three other comics, and Hannah, I think, is offline. I don't know what's going on, but
I locked my phone. I'm coming. I can hear you.
Okay. So when I first moved to LA, I lived with three other comics in a two-bedroom house. One guy had a futon in the living room. I had the garage. Mm-hmm. And one of my roommates, Julian Jones, did a show at the Improv. Like this was like the first week I was in LA. And the headliner of the show was this guy I'd never heard of, Stephen Pearl. And people were like, oh, Stephen Pearl, no way. And I just blew me away. I was like, it's just amazing. And the last time I saw you, you actually did one of my shows. And this was before you moved back to San Francisco. And I had a really good set, I thought. And then you followed me and put me right in my place.
Okay.
It just blew me away.
Out of the way, youngster. Let me show you how it's done.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And then you hit me up for money.
I've had
more money than I was going to pay you.
Oh, more than I was going to. Oh, well, I'll be waiting for that extra amount to arrive any day now.
So. Which I was happy to give because you were so good.
Thank you so much. I sweat for my dough. So yeah.
But you're born in Rockaway, Queens. Is that correct?
I was born in Far Rockaway, New York, in St. Joseph's Hospital, which is now St. John's Hospital, where I coincidentally had a hernia operation in March of 1980. Then I was raised in Hewlett, New York, a little down the road a piece.
Where?
Five Towns, Hewlett, New York, like Goodfellas country, the Five Towns. You know? It's a Jew boy from the Five Towns, don't want to date Italians. You know? That's where I grew
up. Oh, okay.
So like Jews and mobsters. You know?
And how did you come from New York to San Francisco? Because there's like a whole gap there.
There is a gap there. In the summer of 1976, I had a friend who wanted to spend the summer in California, and I had nothing to do. I was like 20 years old, had 1 year of school left, and his father had died, but his credit cards were good. So, hey, look, we'll charge everything to the credit cards. Okay, I'll go with you. So we drove. I'd never been cross country before by land, and we settled in Tiburon, California, this beautiful suburb. And he got an apartment, like two-bedroom apartment for $400 a month in 1976 with this view you wouldn't believe. And I'd never seen anything like this. I'd never been out of New York, really, except for a year in Ohio. I go, this is beautiful, man. As the weather's good and the people aren't telling me to go fuck myself, but it's really pretty here. And, you know, it's not New York, so I want to live here. So I saved my pennies. I went back to New York. I finished school. God knows why. And I went back to San Francisco. I moved to San Francisco 3 years later. Where coincidentally this big comedy scene was just starting to happen. And I just, I was doing the day job thing. You can live on like $125 a week back then at a studio apartment between the Tenderloin and Knob Hill, like 200 a month. And I was going to all the clubs. The Holy City Zoo was a club, the little urine smelling soaked rotting cabin where everybody went to perform. And I met Robin there and a whole bunch of other people. And when people did sets elsewhere, they would end up at the zoo afterwards. That was the big gathering place. So I went there and I went to the Punchline. I went to the other cafe and any club that would have me on an amateur night or an open mic night. And I got better and better. And then this guy named Alex Bennett, a radio guy from New York, came out to San Francisco morning show. And luckily for me, I became one of his favorites. And I became a star in three area codes. And the rest is history.
You're not the first one. I'm trying to think who else was coming to Alex Bennett help him out.
I was a god. What was
it? Somebody else was telling me that they got Alex Bennett's show, and that's how they...
Oh, yeah. He was good for Bobby Slayton. He was good for me. He was good for a bunch of people. So, you know.
Was Bobby Slayton out in San Francisco, too?
Yeah, sure. I think he moved.
Robin Williams was already on TV, but he was still going to do the clubs.
Oh, sure, sure.
Bobby Slayton.
When I first saw him, I go, is that him? That's not him. What's he doing here? No, it's not Robin. It is Robin. It was holy shit. So he went up, he did a set, and the place would fill up. If there were three people in the club, he'd go on stage, you know, this crowd would appear out of nowhere and just pack the place. And then they'd leave.
Sure.
So he was done. So, you know, the energy just got around. The word got around. Robin's on stage. So, you know, it was amazing.
And were you guys friends right off the bat, or?
We became friends quickly. You know, I had cocaine on me, so he wanted to be my friend. Yeah, we just talked and became friends and blah, blah, blah. I didn't see him that much in L.A. I saw him twice the whole 23 years I was in L.A. Once I moved back up to San Francisco in 2009, I saw him all the time and we reconnected. So, you know, we went to his wedding.
Part of the reason I wanted to have you on is there's two things. First, I did our mutual friend Linda's Facebook Live and mentioned you and we were talking about you. And my father coincidentally sent me Robin Williams' book, the biography that came out a couple of years ago, and you're all over that.
I've heard. I mean, I won't read it. I haven't read it, and I won't read it. But you know, it's.
But you're all. I mean, you're all over it, basically. Really all over the,
like
recalling the old coke-filled days.
I haven't.
Where do you get your energy now? Because I'm assuming you're not on coke anymore.
I haven't done coke in like 30-some years, and I only went on stage on coke once in my life. So nobody's only one crowd saw me coked out on stage.
How's that?
That was a New Year's Eve 79-80 at the Holy City Zoo. I thought it would be, hey, if I get some coke, I'll have a real good set tonight. Oh, that was a bad idea. So I did I did some blow. I'm walking around the block before I go on like 50 times. I'm sweating like a pig after being on stage. And, maybe this wasn't a good idea. I don't know what to do. I got 50 plus or no. So I'm thinking of the Pythagorean theorem and the speed of light. What do I do? So, and I had my first encore that night. And I go, no, this wasn't worth it. The coke had nothing. Somehow I got through it in spite of the coke. But afterwards, it was a different story. You know, you still got that energy going and you want to party all night. So, you know, especially with other friends who've been doing the same thing. So.
But you always have that frantic energy, even now.
I have it
at your home.
The coke. If I was on the coke, I'd be like this. I'm like this naturally. So you know, and the weed calms me down too. So you know.
Yeah, you're like the contrarian. Coke slows you down.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
I'm really hungry and sleepy. I don't know. Coke didn't make me sleepy. It just wired me out. But it's horrible.
Now, am I correct now? And I'll move off of that because I want to get to the – I want to hear about all the 80s comedy store hijinks and all other stuff. But the joke, from what people have told me that – and I remember as a kid hearing him say this was – was this yours that when George Bush was in the White House, it's nice that his wife was on the $1 bill?
I think him and me and like 30 other guys did that because it was so obvious. He looked like George Washington. So
and Robin did it on Comic Relief, and he was like,
I never claimed that to be. I did it, and he did it. Like 30 other guys did it. So and then I stopped doing it because 30 other guys were doing it. So I changed it to the Quaker Oats Man, and then he did the Quaker Oats Man, and 30 other guys did the Quaker Oats Man, and then I stopped doing it. So yeah, but that was a long time ago. But
that's my philosophy on joke stealing, and you know I'm just you know, apparently if Robin Williams if somebody said you know that was somebody's joke, including yours, he would give you checks.
Yeah. So something like that, I didn't even bother claiming as mine. So I guess probably everybody thought of it at once. So that particular joke, the Barbara Bush joke, but. You know.
But now with YouTube, everybody's calling every comic out for every...
it's insane. Or you do a joke that's slightly on edge. And, oh, you shouldn't do that joke. Ruin your career. It's insane now. It's just...
No, but I mean, you know, like Carlos Mencia, like they, you know, they killed him. Amy Schumer.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, those are pretty blatant. But I've had people say, oh, you took my joke. I had a similar joke. And I just write another joke.
That's all. Yeah. Sure.
If one joke defines your career, you suck.
Yeah. Well, somebody like, you know, 19 years older said, you did my joke. Well, heck, I did that joke in 1984. So I don't think it's so, the math goes against you on this one. So I don't know. It's just, you know, that's, if I'm doing a set, I'll go out and I'll hang out here in Vegas where there's a million places to play, which I really like. I wouldn't go to the Comedy Store or I wouldn't regularly any of these places because it's ugly, you know.
This is going to kill you. You can't go up in front of audiences and get that rush. It's killing me.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You can't do that unless you want to do it for free or a slice of pizza or something, you know. So, I like to get a few shekels for what I do. So, otherwise, stay at home. 64, man. I could be at home with the cats hanging out, you know. I enjoy that, too. So,
You can't even go to the bus stop and rant like a homeless maniac anymore because nobody's out there.
No. Oh, well, right now, nobody's anywhere. It's like
you see
that movie, The World of Flesh and the Devil with Harry Belafonte from 1959, where the bomb goes off and there's three people left on Earth.
And you just got to knock on people's door and pretend you're Postmates and do jokes.
Streets. It's like it is now. It's insane, man.
Yeah, you got to knock on people's door and say you're Postmates and then start doing jokes. I mean, that's all you can do.
I'm just writing and just waiting to go on stage again. Hopefully this thing will end, you know, and it's not the end of days. So, I don't know.
Well, and you just got there like a couple years ago.
got here a couple of years ago, September 6, 2018, I moved here. And I've been
little here, did you know?
Little did I, yeah, it was good for a year and a half, and then bam, you know, we're good for a year or so, and then bam, this thing hits, but it's hit everywhere, so nobody's doing anything now. It sucks, you know. What can you do? I'm like, I knew I should have moved to Greenland. It's a good
I think the Greenland comedy is probably doing well.
Yeah, the Mitzi Nanook's comedy igloo is doing very well there, and there's all kinds of things.
Yeah. It's so cold here in Greenland. How cold is it? Yeah.
Guys are playing hookers to blow on their hands. But I gotta tell you, it's cold. That's old.
Now, did I read right that you met Lenny Bruce when you were 10?
I did meet Lenny Bruce when I was 10. I didn't know it was him until years and years and years later.
What, you guys have the same dealer? What? How
yeah, did you meet? Yeah, I was 10, man. I was moving on to the hard stuff. From liquor making powder to, yeah. So, we were in California. We lived in New York. I took a trip to California with my parents. And when was it? It was like late June of 66. I just got out of the fifth grade. And Mr. Stillman, a wonderful teacher. And we were walking along Fisherman's Wharf one day, and there were two guys there. And my father goes, oh, Professor Irwin Corey and blah, blah, blah. And there was kind of a slightly chubby guy with a beard just standing there. And right. Irwin Corey was really animated.
Right.
And, how are you, young man? Who are you? How are you? Don't say who are you. Say how are you? How are you? How are you? How are you? And Lenny, I kind of shook his hand. It was kind of a clammy, it was just there.
Irwin Corey was just clammy?
No, he was cool. He was like, hey, and I shook the other guy's hand, and it was kind of a clammy.
Lenny Bruce had the clammy hands.
Yeah, Lenny Bruce had then. And my father, he was playing the Fillmore that night. Bill Graham was putting on the show, and the opening act was a band called Frank Zappa and the Mothers of Invention. And my father didn't see that show that night, and I didn't understand what any of that shit was, you know. And I was in the fifth grade. I was just getting out of the fifth grade, and I was 10. But my father went to see the show, and he said, well, you know, there's this weird band that made these noises. Then this guy came on and mumbled, and he had a beard. You know, there was the guy I saw had the beard, and he mumbled. And he didn't say much. And it was Lenny Bruce. I found out years later. I told my father about that day years and years ago. And he said, yeah, that other guy was Lenny Bruce. I go, holy shit, that was Lenny Bruce. Yeah, I thought it was a guy with a beard, and Lenny had the beard before he died. He was dead like within five weeks later or something like that. It was like near the end. But my father told me later, he saw him in New York in 1960, and he was brilliant. And then he saw him that time, and he wasn't very brilliant. So,
Frank Zappa.
There you go. And there's a purple guy over there.
Hannah's overcome with the story. So it's Frank Zappa, Irwin Corey, and Lenny Bruce on the same show?
Well, I worked with Irwin Corey later on in 1985, and I brought that day up to him. I was never at Fisherman's Wharf. I was never with Lenny Bruce. I remember. That was you. And I think I was told the other guy was Lenny Bruce. My father wouldn't lie to me. He was a nut in other ways, but you know, he wouldn't lie about me meeting Lenny Bruce, and who I had no idea who he was till years later. So this hand,
yeah, Irwin Corey was
hand shook the hand of Lenny Bruce. Cold, a reenactor, like, this is Lenny's hand. This is my hand. Hi, glad to meet you.
Oh, I hate those. Ooh,
I remember that. That was the first.
You know who else? Handshake, you know who else shakes hands like that?
I hate handshakes like that. Give me a firm one or just. A fist bump.
You know who else shakes hands like that, Steven?
Who?
Snoop Dogg.
He has one of them nasty little rubber handshakes.
Oh, yeah, no, it's just like.
Oh, I hate that. Oh, no, man.
Didn't grip at all.
I wouldn't know. No grip, man. Rubber hands. Yeah, dishpan hands. Don't like it.
Right hand, Hannah, you don't like the they got to squeeze a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, you can't have that gross, like, you know, flimsy handshake. It's creepy.
We don't want the vice grip, but we don't want the no grip either. We're just
right. No, you gotta have a nice firm handshake. Just, you know, perfect. On it. Practice it.
Yes.
Not that hard.
Man's handshake must be strong like bull.
Exactly.
I can attest to Steven's handshake is not clammy, and it's a nice shake. It's a nice firm one.
Only when I get on stage is wet because I sweat all over the place. Oh my God, I sweat like it's like Oprah around a baked ham. I sweat, pal. I don't know.
So you met Lenny Bruce.
Bill Cosby on the witness stand, I tell you.
Oh,
you're like the real life Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Well, I'm a guy and I wasn't doing it in the 50s, but other from that, sure, we could be twins. Why not?
Like she meets him when she's like, yeah, it's a anyway.
I don't know. Maybe not. The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel in Color on HBO. Don't miss it every week. Starring Ned Glass as the landlord. Oh, hello.
Hannah, not only... I want to get Hannah in this discussion because I know she loves music. And
of course
they do. Stephen Pearl is so lucky. He saw Jimi Hendrix and Jim Morrison before they...
Wow.
Hopefully before they died. I saw Jimmy afterwards.
When they were still alive.
New Purple Haze, we made you. And just kind of laid there.
Yeah.
I grew up in that era, and I was into music, and I lived in New York, so there you go, man. I saw the Allman Brothers do their live album at the Fillmore East in March of 70.
Oh, very cool.
And they were the middle act. Johnny Winter was the headliner with Rick Derringer. That was, you know, they want $5.50 for that. What do they think I am, made of money? I was lucky. I saw Jimi Hendrix in 69 when I was 13. And the first time I took a little something, made him a little more colorful. I saw everybody. I saw the Doors and the Who was my first concert. The Who opened for the Doors in 68.
Oh, that's cool.
And I just saw everybody. You know, I saw Janis. I saw everybody. So yeah.
How was Janis?
She was beautiful. I was in the ninth grade, 6 months before she died. And I thought she was pretty as hell when she sang.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Even Johnny Winter told me, man, when he had his way with her, she sang to him and it made her pretty.
And Johnny Winter, Hannah, I don't know if you know who that is, but he's an albino blues player, one of the best blues players ever. Incredible. I'll have to send you some.
Yeah, send me a link.
I'll send her YouTube. Send her him doing Stranger Blues and Sirius is a Heart Attack and You're Humbugging Me from the concert in Spain in 90. That'll convince her. If you like Stevie Ray Vaughan, you will fall
in love. I do, yeah.
And turn on to Edgar, his younger brother, also albino, coincidentally, playing.
And we had a blues guitarist from Chicago on who jammed with Buddy Guy, and she didn't know who Buddy Guy was. I sent her some Buddy Guy. She's like, oh, he's great. So Johnny Winter, you'll love him.
Yeah.
Oh, my grandfather even knew who he was.
Check out his brother Edgar doing Harlem Nocturne with Leon Russell on YouTube. And that'll convince you. That'll just show you everything. I can't even talk about it. Just a little, you'll see.
Well, you got to become good friends with Johnny Winter.
He's one of my best friends. I miss him every day. Great guy.
And you opened for him, didn't you?
I opened for Johnny, yes. I opened for Johnny several times. In fact, 3 months before he passed away, we had the best hang in the world. I opened several shows, pass, and me coming on stage and my hero, Johnny Winter. That was really funny. That was great. That made me feel good. And on his day off, I gave him an 8-hour tour of San Francisco in my car. So that was a good last hang, you know. And 3 months later, he ascended. So. There was good closure there, although I didn't know it at the time. But Johnny was amazing. Played Woodstock. He jammed with Hendrix. Muddy Waters called him his son. And just check out the videos, and you'll see.
Oh, no, once you hear him playing, forget it.
Unbelievable. He hits notes that aren't there, like Jimi Hendrix did in his way. Just watch the videos, and you'll be convinced.
What was the last show you were at? Like, what concert?
Music concert?
Mm-hmm.
It was probably Johnny, yeah. I don't go to too many music shows. I had to do more. Let me see. Because whenever Johnny was in town, or Edgar, I traveled with them, and and they were my favorites. So I know I've seen other people. I can't remember. My mind is blank.
So you grew up, and you got to see so many iconic people, music.
Yeah.
What do you see people today? It's just
nothing. There's nothing today. There's nothing. Yeah. It's an intermission. Yeah. It's an intermission of people either talking or singing. So there's no. There's no.
What was the last band you liked that just came out? That came out.
Who?
Yeah.
Who's the last new band that you liked?
Magic Slim and the Teardrops. Johnny liked them, and that's a while ago though. So I'm trying. I don't follow anybody. The Ramones was the last band.
Ramones, okay.
I love the Ramones. I go up to 1974, and I kind of stop there.
there's nothing wrong with that.
I love the Ramones.
What's it like doing stand up in front of a Johnny Winter audience?
If it was a big place, I prepared. I had a Johnny T-shirt on. I had my stage pass dangling from me, so you know, everyone could know I was connected with him in some way. And I just fucking hit him hard, man. And I did well. And I was surprised. But even Johnny told me, Steven, you're about the only comic that ever opened for me that didn't come off the stage crying, man. Because guys would throw things. Johnny Winter fans are notorious. They want Johnny Winter, man.
Oh, sure.
But I just hit him hard, and I did well. I was like, thank you, you know. So for the God.
What other bands have you opened? What was the weirdest band you opened up for?
Depeche Mode in 1982. Remember Depeche Mode, whatever they call it. Depeche Mode, yeah. Oh, okay.
You opened for Depeche Mode?
Yeah. It was... like Jimi Hendrix opening for the Monkees or something. It was weird.
Yeah, you got a depressed crowd.
Like cheesecake clams on the same plate. It was, and I had long hair at the time. And this was like the new wave when everyone had those spiky hair and everything. And I did not fit in at all. And I just did, I underwent taunts for about 15, 20 minutes. That didn't bother me at all. And I threatened to push the guy's keyboard over just to piss the audience off. You want me to push this off? I'll do the whole show. I don't care. Ah, get off of here. Thank you very much. I earned my $60. Good night. Those are the good old days. I even wore a tie for that one, those bastards.
And then just can't get enough. I just can't get enough. That's what we've been waiting for.
I couldn't even name one of their songs. I don't know. If it was after the Ramones, I don't know.
So what were you like in grade school? Were you the funny kid or were you quiet?
I was like the class heckler. I used to heckle the class clown and get him kicked out of the class. I was a cartoonist. I drew cartoons and I draw cartoons and pass them around. And I'd pass them to the kid I didn't like, and I'd make him laugh out loud, and he'd get kicked out of the class. I was the class cartoonist.
What about you, Mark? Were you funny when you were young, or?
Was I what?
Mark, were you the class clown? What were you when you were in grade school?
No, he heckled the class clown.
No, you. Which is
me?
You?
Oh,
are you? You? Right over there.
I was kind of in that boat too. The class clown was always like some popular guy that was kind of funny, but not really funny. I'd be like a sniper. I wouldn't joke around all the time, but when I did, it hit.
Yeah,
I knew just when to do it.
Class sniper, I like that. Yeah, yeah.
So I was a class clown sniper.
Class clown was school funny, but he wasn't real funny.
The class clown was always goofing around, but you know, hit and miss. Me, I was just like, if I saw an opening and the teacher was doing something, bing, and the whole crowd, the whole class went nuts.
Yeah.
Did you ever get sent to the principal's office? Either one of you?
Junior high a couple of times, but no, I was usually a good boy. I got other people in trouble and I usually skated away.
Mark, did you get sent to the principal's office?
My history class in 10th grade, I got the highest grade in the class because I've always been into history, but the lowest citizenship grade. So they had A, B, C, D, E, and F. And citizenship, they had unsatisfactory was satisfactory. So they had 5 letters. So I got AU, which is very rare. But I called the teacher by his first name, so I really was asking for it. Steve, I got a request.
Who calls the English teacher daddy, old Dark Mark? The clown.
No, yes. Jim Morrison doing the Brady Bunch thing.
Oh, my God. I'm not doing the fall because I can't do that anymore because I'm too old.
No, don't do the fall. Just the voice.
Okay, I'll pretend to do the fall. Okay. Jim Morrison doing the Brady Bunch theme. I hope I remember this. Here we go. Till the one day the lady met this fella, lizard, cemetery, blood. All of them had hair of gold like their mother. I want you. Here come the cops. All right, arrest that boy. And don't let him take his penis out this time. Thank you very much.
Oh, that...
Thank you. I saw him do things like that.
Applause break. Thank virtual. You. But social distancing edition of applause
social
break.
Social distancing. Social of you.
So you became the man, really the man in San Francisco. You were in the early 80s, late 70s, early 80s, you really just, you were in that scene and everybody was, I guess Robin was the king, but you were like the you know.
I was the Jack.
You're the Jack.
Yeah.
Now, I hate to bring this up, but what brought you to L.A.?
Oh, God. I had a very strong desire to have my dream sharpened at the edges and shoved up my ass sideways. So that's why I came to L.A. I could only go so far in San Francisco. The scene was starting to fade a little bit.
Right.
And what's the next step? You got to go to New York or L.A. Well, I came from New York. I didn't want to live in New York again. So, okay, I go to L.A. And luckily, Sam Kennison, who I worked with up north, said, come to L.A., I'll get you into the Comedy Store. And I came to L.A. in December of 86, and I couldn't believe it. He got me into the Comedy Store. He grabbed Mitzi. Mitzi would never watch the auditioners, and I had an audition set up.
Right,
and,
right.
You know, it doesn't matter. She's not going to watch me. And I went up and Sam dragged her into the room, cornered her in the seat, made her watch me. I did like 3 minutes. I had a kick-ass set. Thank you. And he told her something like, you know, you sign, make this guy a paid regular or I'll burn this place to the ground and fill it with cement or something. But she told me right there, I want you to move down here and be a paid regular. I go, okay. So I did a lot of work up north and I didn't come down till June 24th of 87. But I said, yeah, sure, thanks. You know, so I went up north. I did a bunch of work, saved some money. Came back down in June, moved for good for 22 long years. And I was in L.A. ever since. And the first 6 years was fun.
The first 6 years was good?
Yeah. And it wasn't so much fun then. It was a living hell! Ah!
But that was the legendary 80s comedy boom, where comedy clubs just started popping up everywhere.
Yeah, it was amazing.
And what was that like?
I never had to leave town. This was in San Francisco. I didn't have to leave town at all. I went on the road once a year because I wanted to. Because just, I wonder what it's like in Austin. You know, so I wonder what it's like in Spearfish, South Dakota. Let's go there this year. But there were just so many gigs, man. You do like the punchline for like 4 days, and then there'd be a one-nighter in Oakland. Then there'd be a one-nighter in Cupertino. Then there'd be like a two-nighter in Burlingame, and they all paid well. And I go on Alex Bennett's show, and I plug, and it would fill up, and I get a percentage of the door. You know, about, hey, nowadays you get a percentage of the door. It's two hinges and a knob. But, it just worked. It was huge then. The comedy boom was just huge, and I was lucky to ride the wave. I was in the right place, right time. You know, I think I was talented enough. So it was made a lot of good friends, and it was a good adventure. Well, it lasted. So can I cash my food stamps here?
But I mean, that was the time in the Comedy Store we had.
What?
Yeah, Kinison was becoming a star. Dice was becoming a star. Jim Carrey's becoming a star. Roseanne was getting the show. Like all these people. You're just as funny as any of them.
I had no problem following almost any. Well, my first week at the store, and when she took me in late '86, I had to follow Pryor three times in 1 week. So she was testing me, boy. So
right.
Woo! But I went down in flames the first night, but I did well the second two nights. So, but I'm all, wow, man. I'm going from San Francisco to a bunch of really funny but fairly unknown people. Here I am, like, following Richard Pryor on stage. Oh, this is the real school. This is amazing. Yeah. You know, it is incredible. So,
and I'm sure half the crowd walked out after his set.
They stayed, but they stayed to stare at me the first time. But second time, I went, wow, I feel like Pat Boone following Jimi Hendrix at Woodstock. Whoa, purple haze. And they laughed, and I had them. And I did that the third night, and they got them on my wave. So it worked. But it was amazing. You know, here I am in this room where Richard Pryor's going on, and Sam Kennison's going on, and, you know, Roseanne's going on here, and Dice is going on here. Whoa, man, this is cool.
And all the milk and cookies backstage, I'm sure.
Yeah, lots of milk and cookies backstage. Powdered milk. Carnation powdered milk.
I was going to ask you, how come you never became one?
On Monday, I didn't get to sleep till Thursday.
Because I know you got a lot of Sam Kennison stories, but how come you never became an outlaw of comedy, quote unquote?
Thank God I'm still alive, man. My hair's not white. God, I didn't want to. I danced on the edge of that circle without getting in it. Because if you got too close to Sam, he'd fuck you up. You know, he like to fuck people up. So the closer you got to him, the more he seems he fuck you up. So no, I was close, but at a kind of safe distance. You know, nothing bad happened to me. So I was blessed.
Yeah.
Yeah, my guardian angel Vito was watching out for me.
And then, the other people, I saw a clip of you at the, it was about the Montreal Just for Laughs.
Yeah.
And Jim Carrey introduced you, and
yeah.
You could tell, like, he, you know, he was definitely a fan.
Oh, he gave me a great intro. I was very happy with that. You know, I had a kick-ass set and went on TV, and my career went nowhere after that. But still, it was fun.
What was that guy like when like in the 80s and early 90s?
I didn't know him that well. Just a little bit we'd hang out. I was mostly hanging out with Sam, and when I came to LA, hanging out with Sam and those guys. And
right.
Was really part of that clique. When I'd see him, I'd say hello to him and stuff like that. And in Canada at that time, we really didn't hang out. He just kind of introduced me, and we kind of said, hey, how you doing? Passed each other. That was it. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now, the reason that I guess you're not – you're not a household name, even though you should be.
Like Comet or Jergens or Crest. Oh my!
No, you never got a TV show or a movie
I was on a. I wrote a pilot called Gilligan's Peninsula, but it only ran once because they found their way off. I had Mork and Mengele. I watched the fun one, a wacky alien moves in with a Nazi wanted war criminal. That didn't go too well. And, I just didn't. I never got the break, damn it. God damn it. I was going to kick a daughter, motherfucker, son of a bitch.
Was there anything you auditioned for that?
I went on lots of auditions, shit that someone on, some things you never heard from again, commercials, TV shows, movies, name it. You know, I don't know. Part of me was a fuck up. I just wanted to do stand up and have a good time and get high and, you know, hang out with friends and stuff like that. So, no, I didn't get a break, but I did 4 evening at the Improv. So there you go.
You did do an evening at the Improv, but yeah, it's kind of weird. When I first started out, I was at the Laugh Factory. Now, I told the story before, but Jamie came over. He saw me. He's like, "Buddy, you got a lot of talent. You're very funny, but you got to get your act for TV. You don't want to be like a Tom Dreesen." I'm like, "What's wrong with that?"
Don't want to be like Tom Dreesen
and just do the clouds and just do comedy. I'm like, "What's wrong with that?" That's what I want to do.
Celebrity golf tournaments and rakes on it in a fortune and open for Frank Sinatra. Yeah, who'd want to do that? Tom, the best. If I had 1 billionth of the career Tom Dreesen had, I'd be smiling.
Great career. I'm hopefully now that some people are stuck at home and got nothing to do, maybe I'll get him on. So.
Yeah. Oh, Tom, I interviewed Tom. Check out my I have a podcast show. It's old timey, but it's still up there. Riffrendum, RiffrendUm.
Oh, that's great.
I interviewed Robin on it. I interviewed both Johnny and Edgar on it, separate interviews. I interviewed Tom Dreesen on it, Professor Michaels, a bunch of. So check out Riffrendum.com. And Tom's a good guy, man. Just ask him. You know, he said yes.
Yeah, I remember he said he might come down to the studio at one point. Uh-huh. And we just never connected. But now that he's at home, why not?
Yeah.
But Hannah, I forgot to tell you about Edgar Winter, who was Johnny Winter's brother. Mm-hmm. Were they twins?
No, Edgar's 3 years younger.
Yeah, they were both albino, and he was a keyboard player, and he had some hits in the 70s.
Oh, yeah.
He probably had more hits than Johnny, I think.
Yeah, he had more hits. Johnny pretty much was the hit. You know, you go out and see him pick up that guitar, and it was all over, man. So it's off to the races, and Edgar had Frankenstein and Free Ride, a couple of hits. But he's got some jazz albums, like listen to Entrance or Jasmine Night Dreams or White Trash Recycled. Woo! They didn't sell a lot of copies, but that's just among the best of the best music ever. It's super music.
Yes.
It's like there's James Dean and Brando. This is like the James Dean and Brando of music. It's insane.
I'll have to send you both the Edgar and Johnny Winter albums. But like I say, I when I first met you, I mean, you're great. And every time I would see you, I remember another time at the Improv. I think you were doing some Jay Leno bit, and I was just on the floor. I don't know. I just at some point, comedians just started. Did they always hate Jay Leno? I mean, I met him once, and he was nice to me.
I met him like twice, and he seemed like a nice fellow. I guess if somebody, you can tell when somebody's doing well, because when everyone else starts hating him, then they're doing well.
he's a nice man.
That's because he's corporate and straight, and you know, appeals to the suits and everything. But I don't know. He's a talented son of a bitch, and if you ever see him in concert, he's one of the funniest people around. So you know, you can't knock success, and you can't knock talent. So what the hell, you know?
No. Well, I think the theory is that he never really broke too many comics on the Tonight Show.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Johnny did.
He's had more unknown people on, like me. So you know, but I was a Letterman fan all the way. I never watched Leno, so you know, it was like Beatles or Stones. You know, I picked my side. So.
What do you pick, Beatles or Stones?
Well, both for that, you know. When it's
Letterman,
Leno, I pick Letterman. When it's Beatles, Stones, I say both. And they say, you got to pick one. I go, bite me, both.
What about you, Mark? Beatles or Stones?
Oh, always the Stones. I'm the one person, we talked about this. I'm the one person that doesn't like the Beatles. And,
I like the Beatles.
Really? My mother played it so much when I was a kid that I just got desensitized.
I had a friend who was in the Beatlemania show years ago, and I visited him backstage. And before the show and after the show, they're playing Beatles music backstage just so they can stay in that frame of mind. And on stage, they're playing Beatles. And I said, do you ever get sick of this? He goes, I can't allow myself to get sick. I do. It's great music, but if you hear it over and over and over and over again, nothing else, it'll drive you nuts. So, but I can't let myself get sick of it. So, you know,
some people, they get very offended. Like, I don't like Johnny Cash, and nor do I like the Ramones. And people just freak out over those little guys.
Yeah,
it's personal preference.
Yeah,
but yeah. I will say I've never seen anybody dare to heckle Steve Pearl.
It's happened.
When was the last time you were heckled?
Oh, I was in Let's see. I was in
South Carolina.
Probably, yeah, South Carolina. Yeah, yeah. The girl was drunk, and she kept walking towards the table, knocking people's drinks over. And then she had like this manifesto of why she didn't like me.
And wow.
And it just wouldn't shut. And the crowd was just like noisy and broke into different discussion groups. And there was no way I could win them back. So I called her that word, and they shut the show down. And they paid me all my money, and I flew home the next day. So
you called her the C word or the B word?
The C word. Because that's what she was.
Yes.
And I asked for her phone number so I could call her every day and call her that name just so she remembered what she was.
Oh, that's awful.
Yeah.
But no, she shouldn't have heckled.
She said it wasn't even a heckle. It was like this manifesto. Why? And another thing, why I don't like you. Dang it. And she go to the back of the room, knock some drinks over. Then a minute later, she come back. Yeah, I can't win this one. Okay, this is going to be a long minute. What?
Do you remember anything she said? Did she say anything clearly, or was it just?
There was a lot of slurring. There's a lot of slurring there. Yes, I made out a couple of vowels and a few consonants here and there. I heard I made up a ow and a. So I called her a.
and the other thing is, I would imagine just you must relish the look in some comics' eyes that has to follow you after you've had one of those.
I'm not hard to follow. I leave a weird vibe, but usually a good one. So, you know, nobody really, I don't think I'm that hard to follow, you know, unless I really bomb badly. Then it's like a bomb went off and there's nothing left. It's like ruins. But no, it's, I don't know. I think I'm not that hard to follow. So that's me.
But there's a palpable buzz in the room. I've talked about this with comics. When you really do that well, just your energy is still in the room.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody, you know, it's like you say with Pryor, you had to diffuse that energy before you get to your act.
Oh, yeah. Oh, following him was like, woo! You're walking into this force field when you follow him. It's just insane.
And I told comics that, and comics were like, I don't know what you're talking about. And I'm like, you must not be that great. Never had that happen where there's a buzz in the room after your set?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's just a good feeling when you do that. But, you know.
Do you think comedy can be taught? Seriously?
Maybe basics, but like, you know, don't hold the mic like this, you know, but no, I just got to keep doing it, you know, and most people who teach can't do, so, you know, that's why they teach, so, just go out and do it every night, and you'll know soon enough if you're good or not, or some people are just delusional, and so they think they're good, and they suck, and they've been doing it 30 years, so who knows.
Because until the bubonic plague of the 21st century, everybody was doing comedy. Like my dry cleaner's doing comedy. Everybody's doing comedy.
Yeah. Sometimes people wonder if like they had the bubonic plague, if like, you know, court jesters had their gigs canceled. Oh, great. They were on quarantine. Had some new jokes about the king. But I don't know. Just something I think about. what was the question?
People think it's easy. And when you do it, you make it look easy. But I know it's not.
It's not easy, but when you're doing it 43 years, it is kind of getting a little easy. So I just get it. You got to make it look smooth. That's one thing I learned from Robin and Jonathan Winters, kind of make some things look like you're making them up on the spot, even if you've done it 50 times, because it keeps the energy fresh and it keeps you fresh doing it. And also, it can also lead to adding to an old joke and adding new things to it. So, you know, like.
And how do you do it?
Branches.
I finally got to it. How do you do it? How do you make all these jokes? How do you make a joke that you've been doing for 30 years look like it's right off the top of your head? Because I've seen you do it.
I do it. I still get it. Because I'm too lazy to write. How about that Jimmy Carter? Boy, he has some teeth. You have to have fun doing it. You still have to have fun. And I still enjoy being in front of a crowd. You know, there are nights I'd rather stay home. I'm older now, but I still love getting in front of a crowd. I never got tired of it. I talk to friends of mine who are my age. I go, do you enjoy doing this? Because I really don't enjoy doing it anymore. I go, well, you look like you enjoy doing it on stage, because I still enjoy doing it. So, you know, but they know how to pull it off. If they don't like doing it, it still looks like they're having a, I'm not going to say who these people were, because they're really funny. And, you know, you see them and you go, oh, well, he's having a good time on stage. But I just enjoy it. I will never get tired of it. I just enjoy getting on stage. Even if there's two people, if they're laughers, I'll give them everything I got. So, you know, I just enjoy it.
Because towards the end, like I say, when you did my show, you were pretty fed up with L.A. You almost were talking about getting a day job, which I was like.
I was talking about looking for a beam to hang myself, man. I hated L.A. I couldn't take it by then. Oh, God.
Horrendous. And you went back to San Francisco.
Went back to San Francisco. I reconnected with an old girlfriend I hadn't seen in 22 years. And
Tell Hannah that story. It's so romantic.
It is romantic. It was a young lady who was a lot younger than me. In the 80s, she was 19. I was 30. And we had a really nice relationship, very loving and physical and everything. And then I moved, and we just kind of lost contact with each other. And then I always thought about it. She was like, I've been with some women who were really nice, and I've been with some women who were Satan's daughters. But this one, was the one I kept thinking about. And every year, I would look for her on the internet, and I'd get nowhere. And one year, I found her. And this was like my last time in L.A. I lost my apartment. I was staying with friends. I was ready to fucking hang myself. I hated L.A. by then. I was probably not a very fun person to hang out with. And I found her on the internet. And I sent her. There was an address and a phone number. I called the number. It was a guy answering. I go, fuck, she's living with a Teamster. But it turned out to be the wrong phone number. But the address was right. And I wrote her a letter. Hi, this is Stephen Pearl. Maybe you remember me from the 80s, blah, blah, blah. 2 days later, I get a phone call. Yeah, it's me. Call me. I'd love to hear from you. So I called her up. We spoke for a few hours. And she said, come on up here. You know, I'm not married or anything. I'd love to see you again. So we kind of picked up where we left off. And I just came back to L.A. to get my stuff. See you later. And there is no prettier sight than seeing L.A. disappear in your rearview mirror. Oh, my. That's better than looking at Jane Mansfield's titties.
I know the feeling.
And I was with Nina for 10 years. And she came down here. And we're still, I guess we're still together. But she can't live here. The air here fucks her up. And she ended up in the emergency ward 3 times. She couldn't breathe. Mm-hmm. Can't breathe Nevada air. So she's still in California, and I'm down here with the cats, but I'm not moving back up there. So here, that's where it stands now.
I was going to say, the second time around San Francisco, how did the comics, I mean, were there still comics that you were working with before that were still there? Or is
there were a few. I reconnected with Robin. You know, he was all over the place, but he's pretty much living up there, and that was good. And I was with Nina, and that was real good. And I saw some friends. My friend Al Cleethan is there, and Mike Pritchard is there, and Robin and Robin's assistant Becky was there. She's moving to Atlanta come spring. Everyone's moving out of there now. But there were some friends of mine that stayed there, and there really wasn't much of a scene. You had the Throckmorton Theater, which was great. Robin was there pretty much every Tuesday, hanging out or going on stage, and there was always something going on there on Tuesdays, and a few other places, but no. It wasn't like the 80s, man. There was really no scene there. So it was just a nice place to be. It wasn't LA, and that was good enough. So.
Now, did the younger comics know the legend of Steve Pearl?
They do here. I can't believe I go to a place.
In Las Vegas?
It seemed like it's Frank Sinatra walking in. That's Steve Pearl. Let him in. I got to get you a drink. And I get a lot of respect here. I can't believe it. You know, I don't think.
Did you do Vegas a lot in the 80s and 90s?
No, I did Canada a lot in the 80s. But they know who the younger people know who I am. I guess I got them. Maybe they read the Robin book, which I'll never read. But I don't know. They know who I am, and I'm sorry.
So you're on Mark Maron's podcast, and
I did Mark. Yeah, that didn't hurt. So yeah, they know who I am. Robin gave me a mention when he was
and on. Robin Williams. Yeah.
So that was a nice. That didn't hurt. The Robin factor doesn't hurt. So you know, they know who I am. I'm surprised. They know who I am, and B, think, hey, some broken down old man. We're the future. You're the past, old man. Everybody's cool here. And the thing I like about Vegas is, like, old Jews go to die in Miami and old comics go to die in Vegas. And I had a choice, so I came here. So, you know, there's a lot of gray hair on stage here.
Underneath where you're at, there is a lot of drama in the Vegas comedy scene. I don't know if you've seen the Facebook post, but boy, oh, boy.
I've seen that.
There's a little sniping here.
Oh, yeah. I stay away from the personal shit, and I don't get political, because then you get into arguments with people you don't know that go on forever, never, 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 never. And it's insane. So I just try to keep it funny on Facebook, and that's it. I have my little videos of Tony Bennett's hand and all kinds of other stuff you may want to look at. And I just
I left when there was like a whole scandal, like five people were calling themselves a 420 comic. Somebody was fucking somebody else. It was a whole thing.
No, I'm just an old fart that tells jokes, smiles, and takes his money and goes home. That's it.
But when you got back to San Francisco, now how did you reconnect with Robin when you went back to San Francisco? Did you always have his number?
I went to the Throckmorton Theater, and there he was hanging out. So we talked, and it was cool. And we ended up hanging out, and he did my podcast show, Rifferendum, RIFFERENDUM.com. Riffraff.com. And he flew us into New York when he did his play to hang out with him a little bit. We went to his wedding. We had a really good time. He got us in to see this private show that he did in Las Vegas for just 600 people. It was him and then John Fogerty and then Paul McCartney. And he got us in. It was a billionaire's private party, and he got us into that.
Not a shabby show.
That what?
That's not a shabby show.
No, that was that's a bucket list show. You got to go to that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So that was amazing. So yeah, I got you in. Go to Vegas. We'll get you in. So, that was amazing. But
well, I hate to say it.
We reconnected once I got back up north because that's where he was, and I saw him all the time. So, you know, our friendship was rekindled.
and I don't want to harp on it, but away from the stage, what kind of guy was he like?
Quiet. Well, after the cocaine disappeared.
You and him off stage talking, is it still a mile a minute, or
it could go that way, or it could be really quiet, or it could be one of us ripping. You can go like with any friend, you know. You can go either way. He's usually pretty quiet on stage once in the post coke days. So that's like a AC. Robin Williams AC after coke. So it was no, he's just like anyone else, man. It's quiet. We riff together and get a little crazy, or we just it was quiet, or it was what it was, you know.
Well, so what exactly brought you to Vegas? Now you just
San Francisco was souring out. Our rent went way up for a
dump. Oh, I know that.
Had it, man. We just fucking had it. And I don't know if you know Tamayo Watsuki, former comic, now current property owner. She's good to interview. She's a property owner now. She said, "You come to Vegas, I got a place. I give you a good deal." So I said, "Okay." So me and Nina drove to Vegas, took everything we could, and then the cats and everything drove to Vegas. And I got a nice little one bedroom here, and for not a lot of money. And Tamayo's my landlord, which is a good thing. And she stays here whenever she's in town. And there you go. So, and then I didn't know how strong the comedy scene was here. And I didn't know they were using older people. And I got around and I go, whoa. And you get to see all your friends pass through town. If you're not living here already, a lot of people are moving here because it's just cheaper to live here and there's a lot more work. I did maybe 4 days a year in San Francisco when I moved back up there because they pretty much use the same three guys there over and over and over again. So, and there weren't that many gigs to begin with, but I came out here and, whoa, I'm a comic again. I'm working again. This is wonderful. I don't have to.
That's great.
I don't have to.
And you can go back to, you can go to LA for a gig or
something. Yeah, it's there. If I want, I could call a comedy store.
Or Utah.
If they go to LA and just do a comedy store one night, I go one night there and that'll be it. But, you know, I like it here. Right now, I don't want to travel. I like it here a lot.
So, it's almost been an hour. I was going to say, nobody's ever gone after you because your act, and Hannah's, I've sent you some clips. It's not exactly politically correct.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. I don't know what
it is. No, it's funny. That's what it is. And has anybody ever gone after you for, except for that one time where with the heckler, has anybody?
A couple of Berkeley liberals once in a while, but not really. They either laugh or they don't understand what I'm doing. So.
And the way you whip up a crowd, has there ever been like a fight during your set?
Yeah, sure. I've seen a couple of fights. Not men, too, I think. One guy wanted to come and get me, but he was really drunk and stuff, and I had to like bash him with the base of the mic stand, so that got violent.
Oh, really? He was jumping, he rushed the stage?
I was like 6'80", man. And I used to do a Scarface bit. I did Scarface as a comedian. I had this big bindle full, like this big full of flour. And I thought, I got a funny fucking joke for you, Joe. Two Cubans walking through a chainsaw. Fuck you, that's funny. And I put my head in the flour and pretend to snort it, and I'd be all white and everything. And this guy was just like he tried to throw a drink at me. He was just drunk. So I poured a drink over his head. Then I poured the flour on his head. So it stuck to him. And tried my boom right in the kneecaps and right in the face of the base of the mic stand. So then a cop came in and arrested him. So the gods were with me. That was a
look. There you go.
What?
You learned your lesson from Lenny Bruce when you were 10 years old.
And I was in danger. This guy was huge. I was up to
his head.
And then two guys started fighting during a set. And I don't know what it was. Over some girl or something, or a girl or something. But that was quashed quickly. So, but it's usually been pretty orderly. But if you do it enough, you know, there's going to be some crazy shit going down once in a while.
Well, I got so much more. We got to do this again.
Part two next coming up.
Yeah.
Someday.
It's been over. You have a question, Hannah?
No. I was saying we have to do part two.
I'm ready for a part two. Not now, but let's do a part two coming up.
Well, has this cheered you up, Hannah? Have you been laughing?
I have been laughing. I've been laughing ever since he sent me his clips, though.
But I hope somebody gives you a Netflix special. I don't see why they wouldn't.
I'll take one.
Agreed.
I could use the $50.
Or wherever, Amazon Prime. Whatever. I love seeing you. I've never seen you for an hour, but I know it's amazing.
And Come to Vegas once this thing is over. This is
hilarious. Oh yeah, no. I definitely. Yeah. Well, when this is over. Hopefully we'll be doing shows together when this is over.
Sure.
It's a shame that the. And why wasn't there? Why was there never an HBO special or a Showtime special for Stephen Pearl?
I don't know. Why wasn't there one for Bruce Baum? Why wasn't there one for Denny Johnson? Why wasn't there? There's a million guys who should be household words. It just doesn't work out that way. Show business and life is unfair. Show business is more unfair. We must deal with it. That's all. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I could be a bitter old fuck, but I'm not. I'm enjoying every day of my life. There's so many guys I know who aren't here anymore. I'm just enjoying every second. I'm 64, man. I could keel over any second. So I'm going to.
Don't say that.
Yes. Well, I can't top that. Steve, anything you want to plug anything? Is there any, besides the podcast you plug?
Check out the podcast, rifferendum.com, RIFFERENDUM.com. Interviews with Robin Williams and Johnny Winter and Eggie Winter, Tom Friesen and Felicia Michaels and Carrie Sell and all kinds of good people. And check me out on Facebook and my Tony Bennett's hand videos because Tony likes to swing.
And stream your album on Spotify, Deezer, and other places. Not only your album, but there's a Trucker album with you and our friend Joy Gaynor.
Yeah,
and
one of those big Dunlop projects that we needed the money.
I guess the Truckers really love you.
God bless all the Truckers, goddamn.
Stephen Pearl Talking Trash. That's the album.
Oh, yeah, that was the one that was all me, Talking Trash. Talking Trash! That was a book.
That was, 2003? So you'll be
1964. That was good.
Oh, 2004.
It came out the same week as Meet the Beatles, so, yeah. It kind of overshadowed me a little bit.
Phone's dying, guys. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Come back, Hannah. Come back.
Hannah, we're wrapping it up, but... Steve, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you, Dark Martin.
I hope you had fun.
Had a great time.
Stay safe.
You stay safe too, my friend, and let's do a part two soon.
Yes. Definitely. Hope to see you soon. I hope to be in Vegas very soon when they open the casinos and everything else, and there's comedy.
Cool. And now I'm going to tell you how the Jews control the weather. I'm back.
I was gonna say, hopefully they'll get Shakespeare in the Park, but because you do Brooklyn Shakespeare in the Park.
The bee or what?
Brooklyn Shakespeare. Oh. Anyway, everybody, I think Hannah signed off. But go to Hail Hannah Bach on Instagram, Stephen Pearl on all social media, Goth Comedian on all social media. Have a wonderfully creepy week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much, Steve. That was so much fun.
Yeah.